Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and open up the Senate Judiciary Committee. And what we're going to do first is, I guess I should find out, looks like we may have a couple of bills for, or measures for possible introduction. And I'm going to go ahead and open up a work session for that purpose. So we'll open a work session for consideration of measures for possible introduction.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have LC 2202, authorizes owner of real property to use transfer and death deed to pass real property outside of probated owner's death. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this comes from the Oregon Law Commission. And LC 3310 modifies crime relating to child pornography. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is in response to the recent Oregon Supreme Court decision. Another case where technology's got to handle the law.
All right. Chair, take a motion on those two.
Chair, I move LC 2202 dated 2/11/11 and LC 3310 dated 2/14/11 be introduced as committee bills.
Thank you. We have a motion to introduce LC 2202 and LC 3310 as committee bills. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. We'll close that work session. What we're going to do, folks, is we're going to go ahead and do a public hearing. We have one bill that's scheduled for today for a public hearing, and then we have a few bills that are set for a work session afterwards. So we'll go ahead and open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 416.
Bill, if you Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 416 comes to you from the Interim Judiciary Committee, allows a court to sentence a person to supervision who would otherwise be sentenced to prison if the court finds that a sentence of probation with supervision would better serve the protection of society, accountability, and reformation pursuant to Section 15, Article 1 of the Oregon Constitution.
All right. And let's see. I think we had a panel. Doug, I think you and Ross were going to come up. Start us off.
Good morning, Chairman Swazonski and honorable members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. My name is Ross Shepard. I'm a lawyer from Eugene. I am appearing today in a pro bono publico status. I don't represent any organization.
Well, you hesitated there saying where you're from. So your counterpart's going to say from Coburg, so I mean, you know.
We're both Lane County boys. There's no denying that. And as the committee
Ross,
knows,
can you take the mic and pull it down towards you? Thank you.
The committee knows I served for more than two decades as the Lane County Public Defender, and it was my distinct privilege to serve alongside Doug Harkerode, who was the Lane County District Attorney. Senate Bill 416 is a significant bill within this session. It contains three distinct parts. And I will take the two easy parts and allow Doug to explain the more difficult initial section to you. What this bill seeks to do is to limit the number of people that are committed to the Department of Corrections every year. We send somewhere between 4,400 and 5,000 people to prison in this state every year, and a like number is are released on post-prison supervision. So allow me to deal with that issue first. The Department of Corrections has certain programs within the institutions that seek to prepare defendants for re-entry, for reintegration within society. Evidence-based practices, which you are bound to follow, show that people leaving prison need certain support services to avoid recidivism on their part and now are paying for additional reincarceration. This bill would provide for funding to high-risk individuals leaving prison with the services being coordinated and provided by, our current circumstance, resource centers that currently exist in Multnomah County with Mercy Corps being the coordinator, in Marion County with the reentry project that has been spearheaded by the commissioners, and with the Chief Justice being heavily involved. Lane County, the national model program named Sponsors, is currently serving the one-stop resource center. And then Klamath County is also ready to go, in some part thanks to funding that was achieved last session following action by this committee on Senate Bill 385 that did establish the concept of the resource centers. So you will see on page 2 of this bill a comprehensive list of evidence-based practices that have been shown to reduce recidivism. This list was generated by the Oregon Governor's Reentry Council, of which I am a member, and it is a thoughtful and proper list that is validated by national studies. Another portion of this bill that is significant and is clearly needed is an independent evaluation of the success or failure of this approach that we are advocating the committee take. So this will not be an internal report. It will be the Criminal Justice Commission is directed to contract with an independent, credible body to do an evaluation of both the post-prison supervision aspect and the success of the program that's outlined in the first part of this bill, which deals with criminal defendants that are facing sentencing and their first imprisonment, or their first sentence to prison. And that's the more difficult part that I'm going to ask Doug to explain to you. Thank you.
Chair Prozanski, members of the committee, my name is Doug Harkelrode, and I'm the retired Lane County District Attorney. And while we were adversaries for a long time on public safety policy things and making the courts run, we were worked hard to make that go in Lane County. So I'm happy to be here too. The hard part of this is who that's already a presumptive prison person standing before the judge will not go to prison under criteria. And so, with the help of the Criminal Justice Commission, we have identified roughly 60 crimes. There are no mandatory minimum sentence crimes listed here, so we don't have that emotional issue. But we do have some lower-level violence crimes, like assault in the third degree, on the list where, with criteria, the judge can keep the person in the community rather than sending them to the presumptive prison sentence. Our goal is roughly 500 individuals around the state in a year. The theory being that it costs, in round figures, $84 a day to send a person to prison. We've heard the director talk about that number, and we want to try to save that amount of money there. But it's not just a pure savings, because the community corrections folks, they have to have money to do all of those services that Ross just talked about in their communities and to run those resource centers. And, of course, the theory is the services, if provided properly and adequately and swiftly, will reduce the recidivism rate on these individuals. So where we sit today is, we're working hard on some significant amendments to this bill. We're trying to get all the players on board and make the money work too. Leave some savings at the state level, which would be wonderful, and give the counties enough money to do the job and also enough money to do the evaluation that Ross spoke about. So hopefully that gives you the drift of it. And we'll be back, hopefully, with everybody saying, yes, this will work, both financially and also for the offenders.
Thank you. Might I say, Chairman Przanski, that we have found these meetings prior to this hearing today to be cordial and really extremely cooperative. And I thank your counsel, Bill Taylor, for pushing this agenda forward. And I fully suspect and expect that within 10 days or 2 weeks, we can come back to this committee with a finalized bill, and if there are sticking points, we'll try to make a simple question for you to answer on the contested issues.
Okay. Questions, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple. The list of assistants on page 2 is incredibly comprehensive.
Yes.
But it looks in reading the way the bill is structured, for a county to even be eligible, they have to have all of those.
That's an extremely important point, Senator. And I've been advised that perhaps we need to prioritize these resources. And it seems to me that housing and food and clothing would go to the top of the list. And maybe when we bring this bill back, it will have some prioritization. So I understand that there are going to be a lot of rural counties that are going to say, whoa, we don't have the resources to provide any of this. But I think that every county should be able to provide at least the people coming out of prison with a place to live and with clothes and with food.
Mr. Chair, I'd agree with that. I just thought, and at some point in time you may need to have contract services, but to have this as a starting place, that all of these resources and assets have to be in place, may be a bit daunting for some counties. And Mr. Chair, if I have one other question, Section 4 deals with funding for Section 2. Where does the funding for Section 3 come from? Because you're requiring a lot of collaboration, a lot of reporting and things like that of a lot of agencies. So I'm just wondering if there's some sort of price tag on that.
I don't think we know that yet, but that clearly is a valid point. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. First, Senator Dingfelder, and then Senator Wissett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, gentlemen. I have a question on Section 3, lines 28 and 29. It talks about, trying to get there, scrolling as
you had paper, it'd be easy.
So basically, it says that it talks about qualified independent program. And the question I had is, who makes that determination? Is that the counties, or is that through rulemaking with Department of Corrections? Section 3, line 28 through 29, the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission shall contract with qualified independent person or organization. So who determines, is it going to be criteria through rulemaking, or who determines that an organization or a person is qualified?
Joe Przanski, Senator Dingfelder.
The
Oregon Criminal Justice Commission is well qualified to do that work, and this is their business evaluation, and so they can pick. That's the way the bill is worded now. If you want to change it, we can change it, but I think they're perfectly qualified to go find that right person or organization to do the work.
Just to follow up, so there'll be a list of organizations or persons in each county that's qualified. Is that right? Or is it specifically the commission is then... Maybe you need to explain how, as far as the implementation, because obviously I'm thinking about it a little differently.
I'm bringing a lifeline up.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dingfelder, what we would do is we
ID,
would,
please.
For the record, I'm Craig Prince from the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission. When we've been asked to do an evaluation like this, we would do a request for proposals from firms that do scientific evaluations. We would not do it county by county. We would do a comprehensive state evaluation, and we would do the normal request for proposal process.
Okay, and then the other question I had to do with the costs associated, so as I think Senator Cruz had asked, Section 3 is already covered, but you'll be trying to figure out for Section 2. That was the same question I had, where the costs come in for that. And then the other part, I'm assuming that the evaluation will also include cost savings.
Yes.
We've heard that it's certain dollar per day on prison, obviously, and we're hoping there are going to be some cost savings, but I'm assuming that will be part of the evaluation to see if there are actual cost savings by the time we try this pilot project.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dingfelder, we, as you know, we have an economist on my staff. We would have the economist work with the private evaluators who would be looking at recidivism and then translating that into a cost-benefit analysis of this program. So we would look at the cost savings from reduced recidivism, and we would look at the cost savings from, you know, whether they're, as Mr. Harkelrod said, whether they're on probation, post-prison supervision, or they're serving time in prison or in jail.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Senator Wissett, and then Senator Wongamichi.
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski. First, to comment, the program in climate has been working incredibly well. The recidivism appears to be, of course, it hasn't been going on long enough to really determine for certain what the recidivism is, but it appears to be in the low teens. The immediate sanction part of it seems to be really beneficial to the outcomes. The question I see on your prison intake eligible for departure list here, you have delivery and manufacture and delivery of most of the really bad controlled substance are on that list. I would question the wisdom of that. I would wonder if that is something that's also being negotiated.
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Whitsitt, Doug Harkelrod here. We're working on the list. We actually took out the big drug dealers yesterday, okay, that are, so they will not be eligible. And I could rattle off the ORSs, but it's the big drug dealers.
There's an actual quantity delivery that.
Yes, so we've taken out a number of those. On the bigger picture, here's what we've been trying to do. If we don't leave enough people who are presumptive prison on this list, then we don't to put on probation with criteria, then we don't save any money. So we've got to get in the hundreds to do that. And
let me just put another clarification on this. I think, Doug, the ones that are still on the list are probably ones that are users as much as people that are actually selling. And I assume part of the concept is that if they are actually having an addiction, if you can keep them in the programs or get them in the programs, you can maybe break that and get that recidivism down. That's what I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And I Mr. Chair, my concern was in Southern Oregon, we see a string of arrest of people coming into Oregon with a whole trunk full or a whole car full of methamphetamine, heroin, whatever. And I would hope that those people are not are included in this.
I'm assuming based on what they just said,
that was the answer. Was the answer I was looking for.
Yeah. Chair Brzezinski and Senator Whitsitt, they should not be included on the list. If somebody is on the list, I want to emphasize this, they don't automatically get a pass to go to probation. They have to go in front of a judge, and the judge is going to decide whether they're an acceptable risk to put on probation. So it's not an automatic deal. If you're on the list, you get to be on probation.
All right, Senator Wissett, any other questions? All right, Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for your work on this. And I know you said you're working with Council Taylor. I wonder if you could explain who else is around the table, because I just wonder if it's going to be a situation where you get it all worked out and then somebody shows up and says, but wait a minute.
That's always the case.
Yeah. Chairman Brzezinski and Senator Bonamici, I think the someone you may, I'll be just blunt here, the someone you're talking about is the Oregon District Attorneys Association, and we are talking with them, and this has been a cordial, cooperative effort so far. And I my sense is that we can reach an agreement on this. Everybody in this room does not want to have this bill come down to June and have somebody put a 15-foot hurdle in front of it, and we will work to make that not happen.
All right, Bill.
Chair, members of the committee, I can tell you who was at the meeting yesterday. It was the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, the District Attorneys Association, Community Corrections, myself, Josh Naspi, Craig Prinz. One of the things you have to do, and this is to, it takes you a while to work with the experts to get the details. And then when you start to get the details, you can start bringing the group a little bit larger. We're going to have a discussion this afternoon on community corrections with the sheriffs, and we will also talk about this issue, too. So as we develop, but you know, I've had work group meetings where 70 people have shown up, and we didn't get much done. So as I said, this is the core group we started with, and with Josh, and just keep expanding it.
Thanks so much.
Any other questions? Thank you all very much. I have two other people that are signed up as supporters. I'll bring them up together, Doug Cooper and Ann O'Malley.
Morning, Mr. Chair. Senators, thank you for having us this morning. My name is Doug Cooper. I'm the Assistant Director of Mercy Corps Northwest. And I'm one of the co-directors of the Reentry Transition Center in Multnomah County. We were before this committee about two years ago with a proposed pilot project for our reentry transition center. That's up and running now. We've been running for about 17 months, and it's proving to be very effective. It's also the model that is supported in this bill, which is why we're here this morning. Just to give you a brief snapshot of where we're at, as of January through December of 2010, with two navigators and one staff person, we have seen 490 people, and these are 80% medium to high risk. Of those 490 people, 270 of them received substantial help in either resources or material help. And the primary goal of the transition center is to help these participants successfully reintegrate back into the community. And we believe by doing that, we are going to increase the number of active taxpayers on the tax rolls. We're going to decrease the use of social safety net services. We're going to decrease new crime and new victims and the associated law enforcement and court costs that come with that. And we're going to decrease recidivism and the cost of reincarceration. You know, our methodology is that we look at reentry very holistically, with the idea that being that if a person isn't well established in a variety of areas of their life, and if it isn't looked at in that perspective, that any large gap in one area puts all of the work that's been done by that individual, their hopes, and all of the agencies that have invested in that person at risk. Because any large gap creates the increased chance for recidivism. So by doing that, the way that we do it is we, our navigators sit and talk with the participant. They together map out what the biggest challenges and hurdles that person is facing. And then together they map out a strategy for addressing those hurdles. And we, our center, the Transition Center, acts primarily as a coordinating service, and we have MOUs with 14 other organizations in the area to provide services, plus there's a wide variety of other services that we can help take advantage of. We provide essentially what is case management and ongoing support and identifying and meeting those challenges that they have identified. As of right now, the model looks very successful, and I want to emphasize these are very preliminary numbers from our first year. But it looks like our recidivism rate right now is well under 10% for those 270 people. The other interesting thing that's come up is through working with the Multnomah County Reentry Council, the Multnomah County judges have approached us, and we're working on a pilot project to address pre-sentencing so that those judges have the option of assigning, in a very similar model to this, people that are pending. They would be required to come to the transition center, figure out a plan of action, bring it back to the judge for approval, and then they would be responsible for following through on that plan of action in order to meet the requirements of the judge and avoid incarceration. That project right now, we've We've had about 7 people go through it. I got to admit, it's a very different model, and we have a learning curve, but we think that it can be very successful. And, of course, the benefit of that is that we're moving upstream and preventing that person from becoming disengaged with the community and being removed from his source of support. And if we can keep that person engaged, help bolster his chances of reintegration into the community by meeting those challenges that he has, we keep him from jail. And from severing those connections with the community, which are just all the more difficult to reestablish after incarceration.
Good morning, Senator Krasnowski and members of the committee. My name is Ann O'Malley, and I am the co-founder of the Roar Alliance with Doug Cooper, and also the co-program manager, I guess, at the RTC. I sit on the United Way Vision Council, and in this last report that they put out, they chose to do a story on a gentleman who'd been through the RTC, and I thought it might be kind of fun to just read you his story. It'll only take a minute. United Way funds a project called ROAR, operated by Mercy Corps Northwest, that is a reentry program for people exiting the criminal justice system. ROAR is a collaboration of over 50 nonprofits and government agencies that work to promote successful transition from incarceration back into the community. The navigators at the Reentry Transition Center connect recently released men and women with basic needs, housing, vocational training, counseling, and support and other resources to help them live successful and lawful lives. At age 50, Fabian Branch had been in and out of the criminal justice system on drug-related charges for much of his adult life. He first connected with the Reentry Transition Center in October 2009, after his most recent stint in prison. When I came in, it was wintertime, he said, and I told them, I need a coat. That was the first thing they helped me with. Then they helped me get my reading glasses. And then they got me my driver's license, which I hadn't had in 36 years. Previously, I had nothing to fall back on after release, and I wasn't able alone to turn my life around until I got connected to the Transition Center. This time, they helped me through. When I was in a bind and I couldn't get anyone to say, yeah, we believe in you, the Reentry Transition Center folks said, yeah, they believed in me. Fabian now works as a resident service support specialist at Central City Concern. He's working with people trying to turn their lives around, and like he did. I've learned how to interact with people, how to be polite and professional behind a desk, and I'm helping people that were in my exact position find a path to a positive life, the one that I now have. And today, though I lead by example at my job, I also lead with my grandchildren, my nieces, and my nephews. They respect me again. Without United Way funding this project, I don't believe I would have gotten the support I desperately needed in order to turn my life around. That's what we do at the Reentry Transition Center. And thank you very much for hearing this bill.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for the panel? Thank you all very much. I have two other people that are scheduled to testify, or at least signed up, Paul Snyder and Brian DeLashmuth. Why don't you come forward? Is there anyone else who's going to want to testify on Senate Bill 416 today? Brian?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Brian DeLashmuth. I'm here representing the Federation of Oregon Parole and Probation Officers. On the merits of the bill itself, we actually have been looking at this kind of a model for a long time, and have not taken an official position on the merits of this and the redraft. But I'd be remiss in my job on behalf of FAPO if I didn't remind you, obviously, that the resources need to be there at the local level in order to be able to make this work. I consistently get information from parole and probation officers that are on the streets that their caseloads are bulging. They can't do what they're expected to do with the existing resources. And so if we're going to make this shift, obviously, we will be watching to make sure that the resources follow. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Snyder representing the Association of Oregon Counties. I don't get to say this too often, so I don't want to miss the chance that I agree with Mr. DeLashmuth. We have an issue with respect to this bill in the sense, well, first of all, let me just back up and say that I highly respect Ross Shepard and Doug Harkleroad. And I also have a great deal of respect for Mercy Corps. The Association of Oregon Counties believes in the kinds of concepts that are contained in this bill in terms of reducing recidivism and applying the right measure to the right situation. so that people get the reactions from the public safety system that they need in order to stop committing crimes. There are some essential elements to making that happen, in my judgment and in my experience. One of them is certainly the programs that are listed here with respect to this population of offenders, which I understand is also rather fluid right now. A second is the intensive supervision requires the personnel at the local level in order to provide the intensive supervision through community corrections. The third is what the executive director of the State Sheriff's Association used to say to me years ago: you have to have an empty bed with that offender's name on top of it in the jail. And all those things together work well. Without the sanction as a potential response, many offenders won't respond to programs. Intensive supervision without the programs doesn't provide enough in order to get people off of alcohol and drug addictions. So it requires all three, and those things in turn require the resources in order to get the job done. And counties, as you know, are in as much of a difficult situation, and in some places a much worse situation than the state itself is in. And Mr. Chair, you and I go back quite a ways to Senate Bill 1145, and I appreciate once again the efforts that you made back then in order to provide some assurance that funding and resources would follow with the workload. And that's the issue that we need to address with respect to Senate Bill 416. But the philosophy behind it, the purposes, the goals, we're in agreement with.
Great. Thank you. Questions? Bill?
Chair, members of the committee,
several things the work group has discussed. Currently speaking, the counties under 1145 get about $16 a day for people who are high risk. What we've talked about in this group, given the fact that these people are very much high risk, it would probably cost as much as $30 a day for supervision. And that's something to factor in. One of the big discussions we've had has been around the word intensive. And what you'll get from community corrections is that really, when we evaluate the person, there are some people who, regardless of the offense, are not high risk. And we'd like to have the discretion to be able to make the determination. So we've had discussions, should it be high risk, intensive risk, just supervision? So that's where the discussions have been along those issues. The feeling that $30 a day would also help pay for a jail bed on swift and certain sanctions, in the sense that if someone is not following treatment and is coming with a dirty urine analysis, you could put them in jail for a couple of days. It's our assumption that in many cases the judge will say, well, I'm going to put you in jail for 10 days and then put you on this program. So that's another factor that's been factored into the $30 a day cost. This is all based on the research of swift and certain sanctions, immediate sanctions, and that's the underlying premise in this whole bill.
Well, yeah, it seems to me a lot of the similarities that we heard from the HOPE Project as to having the ability to sanction and have people on guard and aware that they are going to be randomly tested and checked, and if they're compliant, great. If not, then they are going to spend some immediate time, in this, some type of a sanction unit. And Paul, I agree with you as to the obligations of the state. I still believe that today, even from what we did in 1995, I think we've not maybe reached that level that we should. But the reality is, for this program to go forward, we have to be able to show and demonstrate at the local level that they are going to have a partner, and the state's part is going to be not only giving the authority, but also making sure the resources are there, or we're just basically spinning our wheels and spending money that's not going to be returning the outcomes that we know that can be accomplished through the demonstration of other programs around the country. Any other comments?
Mr. Chair, I was just going to add that hopefully in the long run on this program, it sounds like the cost savings of the state, we can pass that on to the counties to fund these programs. I mean, I think that's the intent. So certainly I understand your position, but if programs like this can be shown to be successful, then, I agree, it's part of our obligation to make sure we fund those, but hopefully we can realize those cost savings and then pass it on to the counties, because yes, it is an additional burden for the counties, but in the long run, hopefully it'll save money and we'll have a higher success rate.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dingfeller, I agree heartily with the purpose here is to reduce recidivism. That's the primary purpose. If we can do it at a cost savings, that's great. I would add, though, Mr. Taylor's remarks about $30 a day, it's important to recognize that the local control population under Senate Bill 1145, the population that was shifted from prison to county responsibility, I believe, and I thought I saw Mr. Williams come in, so he can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that reimbursement rate is at $82 a day. And this is a similar population would move from prison into the local system.
All right. Thank you very much. And I'll ask once again, is anyone else who wants to testify today on Senate Bill 416? Not seeing anyone, we'll close that public hearing. And we're now going to enter into the area of doing some work sessions. We're going to stand at ease for a moment. Back to order now, and as I mentioned before the break, we're going to go through some work sessions. So we'll start with at the top of the list of the work sessions. I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 75. Bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 75 comes to you from the Department of Corrections, makes permanent the provisions that allow placing an offender in post-prison supervision on inactive status, takes effect upon passage. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there are no amendments, there's no fiscal, no written.
All right. The Chair will take a motion regarding Senate Bill 75.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 75 to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 75 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And let's see, Carrier. Anyone want to volunteer on this one? Senator Wissett, thank you for volunteering, knowing what else we've got going on, so I appreciate that. All right. So we'll close that that work session. We'll open the next work session on Senate Bill 76.
Members of the committee, Senate Bill 76 comes to you again from the Department of Corrections. It includes from the definition of corrections officer, a person employed full-time by the Department of Corrections, the county jail, or the Board of Public Safety Standards of Training is certified, and who has supervisory and management responsibility. No amendments, no revenue fiscal.
All right. Chair will take a motion on Senate Bill 76.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 76 to the Senate floor with due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 76 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Senator Wissett.
Two questions. One is we actually
can
have
you pull your mic down just to make sure.
We actually have a dash one amendment. Is that not being included?
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Chairman. You're right. The amendment on page one deletes responsibility and it inserts authority. Good catch. I'm sorry about that. I even checked this morning and didn't see it. So it basically say has certified a corrections officer described in paragraph A of this subsection as supervisory and management authority rather than responsibility for corrections officer described in paragraph A of the section. Sorry, my apologies.
All right. Senator Cruz, would you like to modify your motion or withdraw it?
I withdraw it.
All right. Senator Cruz has withdrawn his motion that was before us. At this point, is there a motion to adopt the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 76?
I'll move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 76.
All right. Senator Cruz moves the dash one amendment for Senate Bill 76. Any discussion?
I have a question. I don't know whether this amendment changes the meaning in any way. That I was concerned, I expressed a concern earlier about whether the wording of this would have any effect on collective bargaining within the unit, and including lieutenants and captains, for instance, in a collective bargaining unit as an unintended consequence, and I've really not heard any response on that.
I thought there was a response, but we'll see if someone from the Department of Corrections or we didn't have any. Come on up. DPSST gave us this, because I remember, I forget your name, if you could put it on the record.
For the record, my name is Marilyn Lawrence. I manage the Standards and Certification Program for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. And Mr. Chair and Senator Whitsitt, in response to your question after the original public hearing on the bill, both our agency and the Department of Corrections did seek advice from our respective councils at the Department of Justice, and we did provide the committee with a memorandum summarizing the information that that the Department of Justice had provided. We provided that electronically about a week ago to the committee. I apologize if you didn't have the copy of it. To summarize the information from the memo, which comes directly from our Department of Justice attorneys, in bottom line, they concur that although the original language of the bill does not create a collective bargaining obligation generally, that the language could be made clearer to minimize the likelihood of argument or unintended consequences in the future. Their recommended amendment was to substitute authority for responsibility. And then their conclusion was that the proposed statute allowing an individual to maintain certification based on their supervisor or management authority does not generally implicate collective bargaining one way or another.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, so thank you for coming forward. I guess first a question for counsel. Before you leave, you sent this memo to the committee, or did you send it to each of us individually?
Mr. Chair, I sent it to Anola DeYoung, who was going to provide it individually to the members. I apologize if it didn't.
Well, we'll work out the kinks if that's whatever. Thank you very much. So if we can count, just check to see if it actually was distributed out to us. If not, in the future, we need to make certain.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, with the electronic stuff, we're sometimes playing catch up.
I understand.
Yeah.
So if we can just work on that. So it sounds to me, Senator Whitsitt, by making the change with the dash ones, it should clarify at least what the Department of Justice attorneys are saying to give more clarity. So any other discussions on the dash one? Any objections to the dash ones? Not seeing or hearing any. They are adopted. And
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 76 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 76 as amended by the dash one amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And do I have a volunteer for carrying 76? All right. Chair will take 76. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 76 and open up a work session on our last scheduled work session, Senate Bill 423.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 423 comes to you at the request of the Oregon Department of Corrections. It allows the Department of Corrections and the Youth Authority to certify pursuant to rule employees to provide mental health services to inmates. You may remember from the testimony there was Senate Bill 177 from last session, which caused some ambiguity in this issue, and their counsel advised them that it would cause them problems as far as providing services right now as it relates to their licensing requirements.
All right.
And they're asking to be treated similar to what the county mental health people are.
Okay. Chair will take a motion on Senate Bill 423.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 423 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 423 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Open up for discussion. Senator Cruz first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a very good, very detailed conversation with Max Williams this morning, and he fully understands my concerns about having dual systems, one inside government and one outside government, as far as certification, and it's clearly broader than just mental health workers and DOC and OIA. It runs the gamut of things. And also my concern with doing some things in rule that I think maybe should be in statute. But having said that, and having a fully understanding the box that DOC currently is in as far as being able to provide services, I agreed that at this point in time I will support this bill, but I will want the opportunity to put my concerns about the systemic issues on the record.
Fair enough. Senator Wissett?
Basically, I have the same concerns, but philosophically, I just can't get there with this bill. I don't believe we should have two standards.
Understand. Other comments?
Just, Mr. Chair, I share the concerns, but we'll support the bill, but understanding the need.
Senator Dinkfelder.
Ditto.
And for the chair as well. I mean, the reality is we find ourselves in a quagmire, and I am able to rationalize and the decisions that are being made here. We're doing the best we can with what we have at the time. In a perfect world, we wouldn't do that. I will say, and I think it's important on the record, just to confirm, just to make certain the record's clear, what this bill will do will allow only two agencies, the Department of Corrections and the Oregon Youth Authority, to be able to use these mental health providers for the services of people who are incarcerated or, let's say, detained within the state system. To me, I can rationalize a little bit easier knowing that this is not for someone that is, let's say, holding out a shingle to the public to provide services to the general public, and realizing that the individuals that receive these services are in dire need, and based on the testimony we've heard in that 416, this is one of the things that we need to be able to do, is give them the programs that we can give them to the best of our ability to make certain that we try to cut down the recidivism. It's my opinion that this is the best we can do under the confines that we have with our budget, and based on what has been done in the past, it has demonstrated that they does not seem to be an issue that has arisen by using these individuals previously to this bill until we had that, bill 2 years ago or last year when we pushed the other one through and realized that we basically kind of got caught with these individuals not being in the fully licensed under the provisions, which I think most of us would like, but understanding that, I am also going to be supporting the bill. So any other comments?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd just say what I've heard anecdotally is that a lot of these people are transitioning themselves to a fully licensed status simply because if they want to have any job flexibility and be able to get a job outside, they've got to be there. But I do think, and this is a more global issue, having dual standards is not a good signal to send to anybody, and I'm hoping that we pay more attention to this in the future and try to do more of the right thing. But the reality of it is that they're in a box that they can't get out of right now. Right now, the services aren't being provided, and they need to be.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more comment, and I also want to put on the record that after conversations with the department, that I have some confidence that the certification standards do not put the safety of the people who are the recipients of the services in harm's way. So I wanted to put that on the record as well, that there is that certification process.
All right. Thank you. If there's not any other discussion, any objection? Senator Wissett is objecting, so please note that he is voting no. With that, the motion does pass, and the chair will carry this unless someone else wants to volunteer.
I will speak to it, but you may carry.
All right, okay. We'll do it. All right, and so with that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 423,
And I don't believe we have any other work. Tomorrow, we're scheduled to be here at 8:30, and we'll see everyone then. We're adjourned.